States. This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal, medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Welcome to Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho. Here's where we talk to knowledgeable people about all things involved with struggling young people and the programs that try to help them. Today, we're going to try to answer a few questions like, why are so many boys having trouble in school? What does that mean for their future? And what are the 6 secrets parents and teachers need to know to effectively help boys? My guest today is Dr. Edmund Dixon from outside of Toronto, Canada. And the topic is, are we really educating boys? So, good afternoon. Glad to have you here, Dr. Dixon.
Yes, good afternoon, Lon. It's wonderful to be here.
Okay, well, the first story, or, well, I guess it's a story, but the first question is, what's the problem with boys in schools today? I hear a lot about it, so what do you see as the problem?
Well, we find that, at least in my experience and those parents and teachers whom I work with, and I do that across North America, we found that boys in general are underperforming overall in school. Sometimes it's very acute. If you looked at the general public system, boys, you would always find as the highest number of dropouts, the highest number of students in special education, the highest number of students diagnosed with attention deficit. Actually, boys are twice as likely to be diagnosed than girls and 3 times as likely to be medicated. And a lot of that goes to the environment that they have to be in. And they also form the majority of disciplinary problems. And those students who are in special education and those students, if you were to ask the average parent or teacher to look across, say, a classroom of students and pick out which kids are maybe not having a really, really hard time, but just kind of cruising, not bringing their game, as it were, to learning, you'd find that that were boys. And so that's the observation we've made, and I believe it has to do with how we educate them.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure you're right. And the sort of the way I put it, to paraphrase from something Al Gore said in one of our presidential campaigns, everything that for boys, everything that should be up is down, and everything that should be down is up. And and it's a real problem. Well, let's look at the other side of it. Why aren't as many girls having these problems?
Well, you see, there's a number of things that I've discovered. And, you know, I was a teacher and then a school principal and then a researcher. So I've been in education and working with teachers and parents for 30 years. I think there's, first of all, a physiological basis that comes from brain wiring and some of the things that have happened over time where boys and girls' brains wire differently, both in physiology and from experience. And so the situation in a school is often very easy for girls to grasp. One of the interesting things is that girls tend to develop oral language because of their brain wiring early than boys, whereas boys have brain wiring to perceive movement earlier than girls. And what that means is that when you get to kindergarten, for example, on average across North America, boys are about 18 months behind girls in their ability to speak and listen. And since speaking and listening is the basis for starting school and then being successful in reading and writing, you find that right away there, girls tend to get right away what should happen in class, what they need to do to succeed. And boys, in many cases, it's almost like an alien environment, since the movement that their brains are wired for, they don't get to use as much. And so then it progresses from there. We can talk about some of the other things, but it basically even happens from the time that boys enter into school, that they don't seem to fit in as easily as girls, because girls seem to get the school culture, if you will, much easier. And the other thing is that most of the teachers of early age students are women as well. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but I'm saying that there's an intuitive understanding, again, when girls arrive in school, of what they need to do to be successful.
And I've seen this in some of the teachers, female teachers. They just don't get it. Why? I have in my mind a teacher saying to some boy, "Well, I didn't have any trouble sitting still in school. Why can't you do that?" And it's I remember a story, because I used to teach way back when I first started after graduating from college, in the classroom for several years, and I would look at it and see that in the conversations in the teacher's lounge, they would say, the talk would be, "Well, you know, boys are raised by their mothers primarily, with fathers coming home and just being there in the evenings." That's when we still had the single payroll in the family for the most of them. And then they'd go to school, and the next 6 years, it'd be primarily female teachers. And the projection was, "Well, what's going to happen to our boys in a generation or two with this kind of experience?" And I always think, well, maybe we've got a little bit of an answer to that. But that's very interesting. Now, I had a question. Is this cross-cultural? You mentioned North America, across North America. How about the rest of the world? Are boys having similar problems, or is it different, or is it checkered? Are there any research or reports on that?
In certain countries, they are. In others, it's not as apparent. I guess the point that I approach it from, I was actually a school principal at the time I decided to go do my university research, and I was really frustrated with the number of disengaged kids that I saw. It's funny, I didn't really tweak on they were boys, even though they mostly were. But I would see, you know, as the principal, I saw all those kids who were disengaged often. And what I noticed when I did some work on the Aboriginal reserves in Canada and Indian reservations and with certain other cultures, that the things that cause engagement and disengagement are there, but they show themselves differently. In other words, that disengagement for a student, a black student in New York City, might actually be some kind of movement where he's actually displaying that through movement. Whereas if you saw disengagement among a male child on an Aboriginal reserve in northern Alberta, for example, they would be disengaged, but the movement part wouldn't necessarily be there, but the disengagement would be there. And so that, because there's a physiological thing, culturally it acts out differently. But I can tell you that the parents that seem to resonate with me are not just parents in North America. When we have particularly people who are immigrants from India and from South America and whatnot, they express having the same problems. But I can't really speak to the whole world beyond that.
Okay, so but the indication of what you've seen is, it sounds like maybe this sort of disengagement of one sort or another seems to be very common among boys. It might be just that they need to be moving, been out in nature instead of sitting in a classroom.
Well, the challenge is, you see, you talked about back when you started and that, you know, the boys might have spent their time home with mothers and gone to schools and been educated by females, but there was a whole host of other things. In addition to community organizations, scouts, you know, Knights of Columbus, all kinds of things like that, that worked very often with boys to give them some of those experiences. And we don't have those as much anymore. And so the challenge is now that, and the fact that it's very hard unless you are, you know, you have some tremendous luck. If you're not successful in school, the stakes are so much more higher now than they even were 25 years ago.
Oh, and, absolutely.
You know, and so what happens is that boys, well, I bet you know, outside Toronto, I'm in a place called Oshawa, which is, they used to call the Detroit of Canada, right? They had all these car companies. And I taught high school at a very tough inner city high school nearby here. And often, you know, this was back in the 80s too, you'd see some of these boys, 14, 15 years old, who were having trouble. All of a sudden, they sort of disappear. They left. And sometimes, unfortunately, high schools foster that. You know, if you don't want to be here, you know, not my way, take the highway kind of thing. But those boys often could get a job at the Motors, even if it was on the QT, with their father helping out, etc., and then they could move into a pretty nice middle-class lifestyle after that. Those jobs aren't there anymore, and those exits aren't there.
Yeah, I saw that when I was a kid, a lot of my contemporaries or the students that I worked with, they've disappeared. I think we had overall a 50% dropout from between freshman and senior year in the high school I first taught in. And there's jobs in the mines, there was jobs out in the farms, there was jobs in the woods. There's a lot of good-paying jobs, and you're right, exactly what was happening. And there was a place for them to go. But so that sort of indicates that maybe school is just a little bit of an alien environment, at least the way we've constructed it for boys. And we don't have the safety nets anymore that we used to.
Well, right. And the thing is that we know that if there's anything true in this next 50 to 60 years, is that we're going to have to be learning all the time. That we always have to be learning and engaged. And the challenge is, if a boy leaves school, and in many cases, if he's not successful in school and he leaves, he basically has, even if he doesn't express it, the sense that, you know what, school's not my thing. And that can extend to learning's not my thing. So that often those students, when they become adults, won't even go back to any kind of learning environment because they frankly think they're stupid, right? And they mm-hmm. will not take that chance to be able to improve themselves. And then you think about how that disadvantages them, the people they're related to, their families, and our society, by a sense that they got that, you know what, I'm not good at learning. And yet, you know, you talked about working, helping parents with these struggling teens and whatnot. These kids are often brilliant, right? They just need
absolutely
different ways to show it. And so part of my mission is to basically, you know, identify these quote unquote six secrets, but it's basically to change the orientation slightly. A lot of it's, I don't want to say it's common sense, but it's something that once people understand, either teachers and in particular parents too, they're like, oh, you know, those things I thought were not strengths that my son had, they actually can be turned into strengths. And so that's sort of what my goal is to share with parents how and teachers, how can you do this? How can you help every child to be a passionate learner in a classroom?
Okay, well, let's get into some of that in more detail in a little bit. But let's sort of wrap this part of it up with, what were some of the ways boys learned differently from girls? And just, you know, from some of your experiences and some maybe some concrete examples, if you can think of any.
One of the biggest ones, it's the old marketing phrase, show not tell. In other words, boys often want to, you know, shoot first, ask questions later. They want to get involved in something, they want to jump into it, and they want to learn it through experiential learning. And then they're really interested in the explanation and in coaching for improving their skills afterwards. One of the challenges in most schools, although it is changing some, is it's broadcast first, right? You sit still for a while I tell you what's important, and then you're going to be able to do it. And I would bet dollars to donuts, those programs, for example, that you help parents to get their kids into have a large experiential element.
Very, very, very heavy experiential.
Right. So those boys need to experience things. Remember, their oral language is not as strong when they're younger, right? And yet most boys want to succeed. And any of us who have done coaching know that, you know, you're showing them how to shoot the basket. Well, you don't sit them down and give them a 20-minute, you know, lecture on, well, you put your hand here and you do this, etc. You show him, you let him do it. When he's having problems, you coach him. And I really think that, and that's the adult learning model as well. And I really think that's what we need to do. So that's one way boys learn differently.
Yeah, I can see a kid trying to talk 20 minutes to tell them how they do it, that eyes glazing over and you lose them. I forgot to mention earlier, we have a chat function to any of the listeners here that are listening live, and there's a chat function down at the lower right-hand side of the page, and if you have a question, please ask it. And I do have a question, and it's talking about the school, and it's a criticism I've heard periodically that the school doesn't teach life, that it's just a glorified babysitting service. Well, what do you think of that?
Well, it doesn't have to be, but it can be. And, you know, that's not just the school system, right? You know, that's both sides of the fence. Being on the administrator side and the teacher side, you see that too, where parents are often, you know, interested just in having that place. But see, right now, because because of the way things have changed, because most students have two things that we never had for, most people never had for most of human history, and that's information and choice. That changes everything about how students learn. So schools could actually be tremendously exciting places where kids learn. They don't just go to be there. They go to learn and experience, and most importantly, learn how important it is to fail at things and be persistent to succeed. And I think that when you treat them just as a holding place, that can't happen. And yet there are some examples of that, but the structures of a lot of schools make it very hard because they're squeezed too. They're squeezed by expectations that get handed down from above. And so it makes it very hard. And so what I try and do with parents is to say, okay, look, if you approach it through these lenses that I've shared, you can even have your son become passionate at home about something that he'll bring into the school, even if it's got a bit of a babysitting function. We know that the future is for those people who will be engaged and who will use their skills in the service of others and themselves and the world, and that takes initiative. And so I think that schools can change, and they have to, frankly, because as you've seen in your experience, and we talked about it before we got on, people are voting with their feet.
That's right. That's right. Well, homeschooling is one good example of it. And then online education is on that. I know a lot of homeschoolers use online. And some people, well, the Khan Academy is one example, to where online some tremendous information is available and you can sit in your own living room. There's a lot of models. I've talked to a few people. That's almost like a cottage industry. They get a few computers and they mentor kids, and kids from the neighborhood, maybe kids that have been struggling, get in, make it interesting, and everything is there for them, lectures and the whole kinds of things. There's all kinds of models going on, and maybe the school system, after a century of being pretty much the old model of the industrialization era of the early 20th century, I think it's changing. So there's hope that we're going to figure out better ways to do it. That's my hope.
And as you've seen too, parents have more power now and more ways to help their child than they ever have in history. And it's really kind of part of, I guess, both our missions to help them step up and say, okay, so how can you help your child without, you know, I mean, you can criticize the school, et cetera, where it's necessary, but really there's so much you can do, because those Khan Academy courses, without initiative and determination and a goal that a boy has, he's not going to be taking those, right? He's not going to take advantage of those. And so much of good learning comes from lighting that passionate fire.
One thing that's been suggested is he'll need some sort of a mentor, not necessarily the parents, and you know, somebody in the neighborhood, a teacher, the butcher, or what have you. But they need a mentor, somebody to help them to tie into their interests and help fan it. Which I think what you were saying earlier.
Exactly, and then to understand those ways that boys learn, those six secrets I talk about that hopefully we'll get into soon. Those basically are ways to hook boys' passion and use two things that are very important that I call, one is called motivated engagement and the other is called discretionary effort. In other words, motivated engagement, you're passionately engaged. Discretionary effort, and we know this as adults nowadays, you can't just show up even any job anymore. You have to bring your full game, right? You got to almost
go. That's right.
And learning and growing as a person triggers both those things. But for boys, there's a little different approach than a lot of people think to actually get into it.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things on the technology, and we mentioned online education, and on the chat somebody says, well, parents let technology do the job. They just sit the kids in front of technology and don't get involved. And that's a real downside.
It is. It is. And yet that's where, again, when I talk about how you use technology, you know, when I'm working with parents and teachers, it's really understanding what is it about technology that causes such an attraction for boys? You know, for example, video games. Do you want me to tell you why video games are so?
Go ahead.
Play so much. Okay, so this is comes into two of my secrets. There's six secrets, and the first two are movement and game. And the reason that they are so powerful for boys is that because boys have brain wiring for movement from the earliest ages, they're very sensitive to movement. And that's where you see them having trouble sitting still in class. But if you've ever noticed them playing a video game, often they'll sit perfectly still for hours and play a game there. But if you look at the game, it's saturated with movement. And the other part of the game is that it allows boys incrementally to set goals and achieve them. And the other thing that I discovered in my research, which I didn't know before, teaching 30 years, is that even little boys get little jolts of testosterone when they set a goal and achieve it. And it drives them on to higher achievement. So every time he gets a new level in that video game, he gets a little jolt of testosterone. And when he loses it a bit, but often again, he feels he can do it. Whereas in school, if he sets a goal and he's not, because perhaps he's behind in oral language, et cetera, he's not achieving what he can, he'll be losing testosterone, he'll be feeling badly, but he won't understand. He'll just think, excuse my language, that he sucks at school, right? He's just not so good.
I told you dumb.
You know? So that's why games are so powerful for boys, because they get that jolt of testosterone. Well, you know what? Great educators have used these things for years to help boys achieve in the classroom. It's actually not that hard. Once you understand that it is the game and they're really, you know, they like to win, et cetera, but they like the feeling they get when they win. You can construct that very easily at both home and in school. And those are the things I share with parents.
Okay, I have another question here, and I think it's a good one. Technology and the games are perfect for the games and this kind of thing. But what about relationships? Relationships are important there. Somebody has to be there communicating with them too.
It's true. And one of the things, though, is to understand that boys communicate differently when they're younger, and even as they age. Remember I mentioned that because of the brain wiring that they have, their oral language skills aren't as strong. And so if you took an 11-year-old boy and 11-year-old girl, and I show brain scans of this where you see, and if a girl is with her friend, it's not uncommon that she might actually say, you know, it's nice to spend time with you today. No boy, no 11-year-old boy is going to say that. What is he going to do? This is my third secret. He's going to use humor. He's going to make a crude joke, or he's going to use physicality. He's going to bump his friend. He's going to challenge him to a game, etc. And all of those things mean it's nice to be with you right now, right? It's just boys a little differently.
And it's their way of communicating.
You know, I had boys come to the office for bullying, and bullying is a problem, but that wasn't the issue there, right? You know what I mean? It was often boys not realizing that their physicality wasn't being appreciated in a way to show that they were happy or interested, et cetera. And it's something they learn. And so you help them use their bodies, to answer your question, you help them use their bodies through activities and whatnot to develop their language skills so that they can express their feelings. But it's not something that comes as easy. And so that whole business of, you can see a boy and somebody he respects, say he's out with his coach or whatnot and they're doing something, sometimes they don't talk an awful lot, but there's a tremendous amount of communication that's going on there. And this is something we need to recognize as valuable. In other words, that males often show their ability to communicate comes either through how they use their bodies, through how they use their humor. Humor is a huge thing for males that often, again, people don't pay attention to. It's my third secret, because humor is a really great way to link males into social interaction. So good teachers, when they did surveys, we talked to those kids that you help parents to go to some of these programs. You asked them a teacher they respected. Often that teacher had a sense of humor. That's one of the things that comes out, because humor is the way boys actually deal with the chaos of the universe. It's called gallows humor. It's like, you know, what President Ronald Reagan said when he was shot and they wheeled him into the operating room.
I hope you're Republicans.
Now, that's not a female thing to say, right? But guys do that all the time, you know, all the time. They're making a joke because it helps them to take something which can be terrifying and scaring and put it into a context that they feel they can do something about. And that's the flip side. Go ahead.
Yeah, isn't that along the line of what sometimes called, and this is, I see it most in athletics, our older kids or older guys, trash talk?
Right. Oh, exactly. Exactly. Women are often amazed that males will say things, you know, what they'll say.
Yeah, They expect a fist fight to break out.
Right, right. And even sometimes when it does or something, afterwards, those guys could still be together 2 days later, right? Whereas for female, if that ever got to that point, see, this is again where words are important, but when females are younger, they have a tighter grasp on the importance of words to them. And so saying something mean, quote unquote, really is powerful and hurtful more to a girl, whereas for boys, it's just a word, right? It's just something. And again, I have to say too that some of the things I'm talking about for boys and girls, there's a great brain researcher called Michael Gurian who says that about 20% of girls have what you call the male mind. It's not a sexual thing. It's more of the way they see things. And so as we describe some of this, some of the listeners might say, well, that sounds like my daughter, or that sounds like me, and they're female. It might very well. And 15% of boys have more of a higher initial oral language skill. Some of these things might not resonate as much with them. But the challenge is when males are not successful, and I'm sure you've seen this in spades, they either do one of two things when it gets hard. They either do fight or flight. And fight often brings terrible things to society. And flight creates the situation where you got the 33-year-old living in the basement playing video games and sponging off all the women in his life, right?
The question I've wondered about, because I've heard about fight or flight, isn't that primarily a male thing, the fight or flight? And I've heard that females more like tend and befriend.
Well, yes, that's true. They females can have similar reactions, but because testosterone is so powerful and this takes us into those other of the six secrets of challenge, mastery, and meaning, the idea of fight or flight was a preservation mechanism when we're out patrolling the savannah, right? And you had to decide within a split second whether fight or flight was the right thing to do, because either you would not get your prey and your family would starve, or you would be the prey, right? And so those things became hardwired into males so that very quickly they're sensitive to perceiving threats to themselves, and by extension today, I would say to their egos, to their bodies. And so what I used to see, and it'd be interesting if parents out there would see, I saw this as a principle all the time, and I only realized it when I started to do the research. Why? About ages 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, a lot of boys move into fight or flight mode in the way they approach learning. In other words, if they're not successful, they're either causing trouble all the time, they're the funny guy, they're doing all kinds of, they may be getting sent to the office, kicked out of class, having trouble in school and maybe out in the community, or they almost shut down. And they often maybe get by either because they're humorous or they sponge off other people, but they don't really achieve the way they could. And often they retreat into the world of video games, etc. And neither of those are good. Neither of those help them be a meaningful part of the community. And that's where the fight or flight shows itself in the modern thing, because you will have a boy come into a classroom where, remember, you talked about them losing testosterone when they set a goal and achieve it. Well, imagine if you come to school as a little boy, your oral language skills were typical, maybe a little further than traditional, 18 months behind. You weren't really understanding everything the teacher was saying. And then after that, you were being asked to sit still all the time, and the other kids in the class seemed to know what to do, and you know, you were off standing in the corner or maybe even left to play on your own, but not fully included. Then reading and writing came, and you needed extra help, and maybe you were going with the special teacher to get extra help, etc. By the time you're 10 years old, you have a physiological sense in your body that this school is not where you're going to achieve your best. And so when a teacher starts to talk to you about a new concept or whatnot, you literally have that knot in your stomach that we might have as adults when, you know, we almost just got hit by a car, right? And everything tightens up. And we know from the brain research that what happens there is we go to the amygdala, the primitive part of the brain, and all of our higher level learning that we need to do for 21st century living is in the frontal lobes of the brain. But when you retreat, when you release cortisol and all of those other chemicals that come when you're scared, you don't learn. And yet you could look at a boy in class and he could be acting, and again, you've seen this, I'm sure, lots of bravado, I don't care, blah, 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 you know? And yet,
or the guy sitting in the back trying to ignore me.
Right, exactly. And yet, their body their evolutionary history is telling them this is the best way for you to stay safe, right? Uh-huh. You know, it is easier. I'd say this to parents when I talk about the humor secret when I'm talking with teachers that, you know, have you ever noticed that sometimes those guys start the humor right when you're getting to the difficult part of the lesson? So what do you suppose that is? Well, it's easier for him to get kicked out of class than to have to confront the fact, perhaps even publicly, humiliatingly, that he doesn't understand.
Okay. Well, we've been doing a few spoilers here, and you keep mentioning your 6 points. So let's get into them. Would you go all over right. and explain each one of your six secrets systematically?
Yes. And I'll mention as I start, by the way, these things are in different quantities for different boys. And if any parent or teacher is interested in finding out where a boy they might know sits there, they could go to helpingboyslearn.com and there's a free quiz. It takes about 3 or 4 minutes and it'll tell you which of these secrets is probably most powerful for him. Mm-hmm. So let me go into them. These are things I looked at when I left school. I went to when I left school after being a teacher and administrator, so I'd been in school 40 years. But when I left school to go back to university to research after I left as a principal, I did two things. I researched what happens in the brain when you're motivated, and then I researched kinds of places and things where males have learned forever and been successful. In other words, if I look across history and time, where have males performed at their best? And I kind of honed it down to these six areas. And these six secrets are very powerful for helping males, not just boys, males achieve at any level. So the first one is movement. And movement is hardwired into males. And most of the games and stuff they play or watch when they're older involve a ton of movement, and it's also metaphorical. Males are at their best when they feel they're moving ahead, almost like sharks, right? If they don't feel that they are, they often then check out or go into the fight or flight mode. So that you can engage a young boy in particular very easily with movement, but I've done it right up through high school. The second secret is game. Because the fact that they release testosterone when they set goals and achieve it, boys, games are not just something boys play. Games are something that boys are very serious about. And if you can weave learning into a game situation, which interestingly enough, they're doing across North America today, the biggest term, if you were to go at to an HR conference and talk to people about the challenges of employee engagement, they often talk about gamification, even in terms of what people are supposed to do at work, because games are really powerful. And we've known for years, what's a flight simulator except a game, right? With really high stakes. And so that game is very powerful for boys, and you can use it at home and at school. And then the third secret is humor. And I mentioned that humor helps to focus males. There's really cool anthropological research that shows that humor developed, again, on the savanna when you had to pay attention to the changes in your environment or you didn't survive. And humor, for boys in particular, is what's called dissonance. You expect one thing and you see another. And that's why males particularly like a lot of the slapsticky humor, you know, especially young boys. Any kind of humor that has to do with something that's totally unexpected. Fart jokes, for example, right? All of those kinds of things are huge, and yet it helps to focus boys' attention.
I got Red Skelton was mine. I got the Red Skelton. The bodily function jokes never appealed to me as a boy.
But the slapstick or the big things, and the reason that all of them do is because they are big dissonance. One of the things, too, though, is that for boys, humor is an equalizer. In other words, the guy who's in the tuxedo and who gets brought down by slipping on the banana peel is now equal to every other schmuck in the world, right? Even though he appeared so high and mighty before. And boys often are sensitive to that, so humor is often used, particularly when they sometimes – you see it in classrooms. You see it in high school classrooms often where boys don't feel they don't have a lot of say in what goes on. You see a lot of humor underground. The third thing humor is used for is to be able to connect with other people. In other words, to make a joke to someone is actually a way or to get a joke understood by someone or sent back to you is actually a way of saying it's good to be with you in this moment. It's how boys can express the fact that they can be socially intimate, really, but they find it hard sometimes with words. Well, humor does that, and it also connects them closer to the teachers or the parents who use it around learning.
And hey, let me interject a question here, and I should have asked it earlier, but we'll get back onto the six secrets. But aren't males tend to be territorial and a little bit standoffish from each other? That's part of verbal, but aren't boys tend to be territorial, consisting or comparing to each other?
Well, that's all got to do with the movement and game aspect, right? And they often like to sort and rank things, right? And often males don't like it when they don't know what the order is, right? Where they do relate with other people, you know, who might be a little higher, who might be a little lower, and that again is the way that it comes. You call it territorial. It comes with their kind of sense of where are they supposed to fit. And actually, that speaks to another secret, which is called the secret of mastery. That boys crave mastery. It's so funny. You could sit about that kid that sits in the back of the class and is pretending to ignore you. He actually has this deep desire for mastery. But the last—that's one of the last of the three secrets, which is challenge, mastery, and meaning. They're all invitational. You remember the old Kung Fu show where the guy used to say to the young apprentice, "Snatch the pebble from my hand." That was what he was supposed to try and do. And when he could do that, he was a master, like the old master. But that was invitational. He had to want to get that pebble. And so, boys.
Okay, well, like the Karate Kid and catching exactly. Catching a fly with the chopsticks. Okay.
Right. And so why is that important? Because for boys, and this again comes from our background and their brain wiring, boys and girls ask different questions when they're confronted by most things in the world. Girls will often think, like, what's it like? Where does it fit? How do I fit in with it? Where does it, how do I relate to it? Boys almost always first ask themselves, even if they don't know it, this question, what's it good for? What can it be used for? Boys are very functional in their understanding of things. And so that when they know that something can be useful, they want to master it. Remember I told you that boys aren't as good in oral language and often are behind in reading and writing. But in Wikipedia, you know that online encyclopedia, males make 85% of the entries. And that's a huge statistical difference. And why is that? Because it's all about mastering things. It's just like that kid who would come to my office, and he would not be able to tell me some of his times tables, and yet the kid would know every statistic of every player on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Because he chose to use mastery there. The same thing with the kid who the teacher said was lazy in class, and I would look outside after school and he'd be on the skateboard practicing over and over and over some little thing that I didn't know that he craved mastery so that he could share that with his friends. And so the thing, it's interestingly enough that idea of becoming a master, then that's where boys want control. And if you allow them to get mastery but move them towards the holy grail, if you will, which is self-mastery, right? The idea of being in control of yourself. And how do you do that? Well, that's how you use another secret, which is called challenge. That boys love challenge. They get the blast of testosterone, but they like great achieving males set challenges and use mastery to achieve those challenges. And that if you can help boys, and I'm sure it's so funny when you talk about these high school teens that you help, high school age teens, I'm sure that challenge and mastery are huge parts of their development, because when they leave those programs, they need to have that feeling, because that comes to the final secret, which is meaning. And remember I said that boys ask the question, what is it good for? I think they ask an existential question around meaning in life, which is, what am I good for? In other words, what am I here for? What am I supposed to communicate? What am I supposed to contribute in any situation? And if boys do not find a good answer to the question of what am I good for, then things don't go well for them, and they tend to go really badly for those around them. Some of the worst things that males have done in world history, they've done by trying to prove their significance that they're useful for something. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the television show Breaking Bad, but that was seven seasons about one guy doing horrendous things to prove that he had significance.
And well, so, to take it to a more serious matter, the school shootings that have been in the news the last several years would seem to apply.
Exactly. And again, think of the other secrets that I talked about, challenge and mastery. Some of those kids became masters at understanding all about the weapons they were using and all about the school layouts and everything like that. And the challenge for them was to achieve significance by doing something so terribly, terribly big, if you will, and terribly violent. And so what we try and do, and this is why, and again, I'm sure they do it in the programs that you help parents to place their kids, is we turn that desire for significance into service. In other words, taking what it is that you have challenged yourself to become good at and become a master at, and you use it in service of others. So a simple example, if there's a parent sitting at home, well, how do I use this for my little 8-year-old or 7-year-old who doesn't even want to go to school? Well, you know what? He might not want to learn his facts about some of the different states or whatnot.
But you know, the multiplication tables or stuff like that.
But you know, maybe grandpa doesn't know them. And maybe he could teach grandpa how to do that. Or do you know that there are 7-year-olds across North America who make YouTube videos about how to score higher in the game Star Wars, and thousands upon thousands of other 7-year-olds watch them? They're instructional videos, right? Well, why couldn't you take that, do that with the learning that some boy has, that he has to do? Why couldn't you help him make a little instructional video about fractions to prove that he's the master of the fractions? But it's not just because he knows them. Now he's sharing them with other people. In other words, he's taking his mastery and turning it into service. And I think that that's the biggest thing that we need to help males do in our modern society, is to find ways that they can use these tremendous talents they have to serve others.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now I've sort of lost count. Have we gotten four or three or
we've got
five
all
secrets?
Six. We've
all
got all
six in there.
So we've got movement, game, humor, and those are the basic ones, and then challenge, mastery, and meaning. And when you weave those things in the learning, and I was just, and the last one I was just talking about, meaning, that whole idea of what does it mean? I've rarely been, when I was a teacher, I rarely had a girl, and I taught both elementary and high school, I rarely had a girl say to me, "Sir, why do we have to learn this?" They often would say, "Is this going to be on the test?" Right? But that's a different question. Boys, all the time, "What do I have to learn this?" Right? What? Why? In other words, what meaning is there for me to do this? And, you know, it's the same way as, you know, if he was out hunting when he, we were talking about millennia ago, and he sees that there is a deer, but the deer is a mile away. He says, "Well, what's the use of me running like crazy to that deer?" Right? I'm not going to get there. There's no meaning.
Right. He can outrun him.
Right. Whereas if he was walking and he saw that deer was right in the thicket next to him, well, that's a different story. And what I'm saying is that you can do that with learning if you understand that those are the unspoken psychological approaches that boys take to learning, sometimes without even knowing it. And that's why if you come back to the question I often get asked, well, would it be better to have boys in schools, you know, boys and girls separated in schools and classrooms?
Oh, that's always a good question. What do you think?
I think two things. First of all, as a matter of practicality, it's not going to solve our problem because it's not going to happen. But secondly, where it does happen, if they are not approaching it this way, it's not going to work anyway. And the reason it does often is that males, those male teachers that you often find that resonate with boys, they're using these six things without even being aware of it. Without even knowing it, they're using them. And they're meeting boys' needs because, you know what, if they're in the front of their class and they're seeing a kid's kind of moving around in a seat and things like that, they're not thinking, "Oh, why is he disrespecting me by not sitting still?" They're thinking, "All right, we got to do something." Right?
Yeah. And then it gets into a power struggle, and a teacher can never win a power struggle.
No, because that is, remember I talked about challenge. That gives boys a challenge. That gives them something to sink their teeth into, right?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I can see it.
So instead of having him, you know, really challenged in some kind of competitive way to beat his last algebra score. He's challenged to see if he can throw something across the room while you're not looking at him. You know, he'll get his jolt of testosterone one way or another. But
Okay, let me turn this around a little bit. You know, on the six things, the six secrets, and this is designed for boys. What would happen if you did that and for the girls too, or the girls had to say it's a co-ed class or something? How would that work? Or would it would the girls benefit from it also, or would it have to be mixed with some other perspectives? Or
well, yes, because it's called differentiated instruction, right? So that you need to do set up situations where girls and boys can be successful. As I mentioned, about 20% of the girls, this is, they're right up their alley as well. But for other girls, that this idea of, well, let me give you an example. One of the things we use, techniques we use for boys, is called beat the clock. So if you've got a 10-year-old and he's got to do some homework, you say, okay, pick a part of it that that you think you can do, and we're going to set the clock for 5 minutes and see how much you can do. Often boys just jump into that. They love that, because what happens is they get a jolt of testosterone, and it actually, there's studies that show that that kind of pressure improves boys' performance. If you do the same thing with a girl, by and large, their performance will deteriorate. In other words, you're taking something that they want to come to an understanding and they might want to discuss more and have a better understanding and work with somebody else. That's something that a girl needs to do. So that what I say in the class is that you can just set your structure up to make it optional for people to participate in activities or at home where you know they will thrive. And, you know, people will say to me, well, Ed, how can you do this? You know, if I got a class of 30 kids, et cetera, it actually makes it so much easier, because what it does is it has those boys in the class working with you. And if you ask any teacher anywhere, the average statistical average in North America is 27% of a teacher's time is spent redirecting students. Ask them who they're spending that time on. And if they got that, the class got that time back, wouldn't the girls get that back too? You know, and the final thing I'll say about that is that sometimes, even now, girls sometimes get to especially early high school or mid high school and pretend to be stupid, you know, because they think boys necessarily. Well, if we get boys really super fired about learning and being passionate in the class, those smart girls, their currency goes up right away, right? Because we know as we get older that, yeah, it's the smart girls are the better ones to have, you know?
Okay. Well, one of the basics you're talking about, it seems, the movement and the games has been one of the basics. Why don't, let's talk about the school system a little bit and our philosophy. Why don't the schools use movement and games more than they do?
Because I think that they don't see ways to do it. I had to leave and do, you know, the research in university, and I had only come to it accidentally through doing, I had a lot of experience in drama that I didn't have. I wasn't trained in it, but I started to use it and I saw how powerful it was for learning. So basically that's my mission, to go and say, hey, this is so much easier than you thought. It's going to improve boys' performance. It's going to make your lives easier, and it's going to make parents happier. And it can be done by both parents and teachers. And so that's, you know, and we just refer them to helpingboyslearn.com, and, you know, we try and help them there.
Okay. Well, let's put the focus on parents. You have a parent and you have a kid, and I know you mentioned this all the way through. How can they use, or what some examples of using the approaches to, you know, like, say, reduce homework, stress, things like that.
Right. And homework is actually the second largest gripe parents have about school in North America after bullying. So it's a big deal. So, okay, let me give you an example of a really easy strategy that, again, we use in my book and on our website. It's called Toss and Talk. It seems simple, but it's brilliant. You've got a boy. He's got to learn his vocabulary. He's got 10 geography terms he has to learn, and it takes you an hour and a half for him to do these 10 geography terms. Get a softball. And you say, all right, you toss it back and forth with him. He tosses it to you. And once he tosses it, though, to get the ball back, toss back, he has to name one vocabulary word in the definition. And then he can't throw it again back to you until he does the other. And you'd think that was kind of ridiculous. And a lot of girls would think that's kind of dumb. I challenge any parent with a 10-year-old to try that and see if he doesn't get totally focused. And you'll learn those vocabulary words in about a third of the time. So there's
okay.
a...
Th- Well, we've just about run out of time. I want to give you a minute to give a, I guess you could call it a commercial break, your book, your services you provide, how people can get a hold of you.
Sure.
You have about one minute, and then they're telling me we're going to have to shut this session down.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you, Lon, for having me on, and K4HD for letting us come here today. And I would just invite parents to go visit the website, helpingboyslearn.com. There they can – I have a book that I've written. We have a brand new program that's going to be coming out for parents soon. There's the free quiz. And, of course, I also come out and do workshops with teachers and parents, and I'm going to be touring North America next year. So I'd love to come and meet some people in any area. So send me an email, and I'll come out, and we'll have some fun and, more importantly, help your son or your student learn better.
Okay. Hey, thank you. That's been very, very stimulating. Hope to have you back on again sometime to further discussion. But this is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. We've been talking with Dr. Edmund Dixon and talking about the topic of, are we really educating boys? And thank you very much. And be sure to come back next week when we have another guest on the Woodbury Report.